Joining us for today's briefing, Mark George, Distinguished University Professor, Leighton McCurdy Endowed Chair, and Director of the Brain Stimulation Laboratory at the Medical University of South Carolina. Dr. George pioneered the use of transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, and vagus nerve stimulation, VNS, for treatment-resistant depression, which have both been FDA approved. Beside him, Jeff Desplakis, Chief of Mood and Anxiety Division and Temerty Chair in the Therapeutic Brain Intervention at CAMH, and Professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Toronto. Dr. Desplakis is an expert on the neurophysiology of severe psychiatric disorders. Gail Bellissimo was successfully treated for depression at CAMH using repetitive TMS. She will talk about her experiences undergoing the therapy. Benoit Mulsan, physician in chief at CAMH and professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Toronto. Dr. Mulsan designs and conducts clinical trials for hard-to-treat older patients with mood disorders. He's leading a major new study investigating a combination of transcranial direct current stimulation, TDCS, and cognitive remediation to prevent Alzheimer's disease among patients at high risk of developing the illness.
Merci, Penny. Nous accueillons donc aujourd'hui Mark George. Il est professeur distingué, titulaire de la chaire Leighton McCurdy et directeur du laboratoire de stimulation cérébrale à l'Université médicale de Caroline du Sud. Le Dr. George est un pionnier de la stimulation magnétique transcrânienne et de la stimulation du nerf vague pour le traitement de la dépression résistante au traitement. Ensuite, Jeff Desplakis, il est chef de la division de l'humeur et de l'anxiété, la chaire Temerty, en intervention thérapeutique cérébrale au CAMH. Il est aussi professeur au département de psychiatrie de l'Université de Toronto. Le Dr. Desplakis est un expert de la neurophysiologie des troubles psychiatriques sévères. Gail Bellissimo est une patiente au CAMH qui a été traitée avec succès par la stimulation magnétique transcrânienne répétée pour une dépression. Elle parlera de son expérience en thérapie. Et finalement, Benoît Mulsan, il est médecin-chef au CAMH et professeur au département de psychiatrie à l'Université de Toronto. Le Dr. Mulsan conçoit et réalise des essais cliniques chez des patients aînés difficiles à traiter, souffrant de troubles de l'humeur. Il mène en ce moment une nouvelle étude sur un traitement de prévention de la maladie d'Alzheimer qui combine la TDCS et un programme de remédiation cognitive. À toi, Pélie.
Great. I'll now turn the floor over to Dr. George.
Thank you. So will the slide go up or no? Oh, there we go. So I'm talking about transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is a very interesting, relatively new technology developed over the last 30 years, where you can take a powerful handheld electromagnet and pass electricity through it and create a very powerful magnetic field. The magnetic field is about as powerful as an MRI scanner, which is 3 Tesla, but it's very focal, just right underneath the coil. The magnetic field passes unimpeded through the skull, and so when it interacts with the brain, it causes an electrical current to flow in the brain tissue that it touches, and so it's a relatively neat trick where you can non-invasively get in and stimulate the brain of an awake, alert person without any kind of real major discomfort. So I'm a psychiatrist and neurologist, and I started my career trying to figure out where depression lives in the brain and what the circuits are, and then stumbled upon TMS as a potential way of interacting with the circuit and potentially treat depression. And so back in the early 1990s, I did some of the first trials in Bethesda in Washington, and then have continued my career. And it looks to be a very effective treatment for depression for people who've tried and failed true antidepressants. As you may know, depression is very common. The best initial treatment is medications and talking therapy, but not everybody responds to the first medicine. If you try them on a second medicine, you'll get another 25%, but depending upon the study, 30-40% of individuals with depression don't get response or remission with with medications or talking therapy. So it's a big part of the population that needs a new treatment, and TMS is now starting to go there. We've had over 100 studies, 3 large randomized controlled trials, and FDA approval now of 2 different devices. People tolerate it pretty well. You'll hear from a patient. I'd be interested to hear what she say. It's a little unpleasant, especially the first couple of treatments. Feels like somebody's tapping harder on your head, but people are awake and alert. They don't need to do anything before treatment. They can go straight to work after a treatment. There are no restrictions on driving. And it's very well tolerated by people who have depression. As people say to me, you know, I'd do that any day if it gets rid of my depression. And it seems to work in about 60% of people get response, maybe 30% get remission, which is good. Not 100%, but that's a substantial amount. My most recent work has been asking whether we could give it in a different way, not for depression writ large, but actually those people who are struggling with suicidality. About 80% of people who are admitted to a hospital for suicidal crisis are struggling with some form of a mood disorder as well as an addiction. And we have very few treatments where we just take those people and say, what can we do today to get you unsuicidal? We just don't have good focused treatments for that crisis. We tend to hospitalize them and give them talking therapy, change their medicines, but we know the medicines are going to take several weeks to work. And so we recently did a study where we gave people 3 very intense days of TMS 3 times a day, so gave them 2 weeks of FDA-approved TMS in 3 days, assessing their suicidality, and we found that the group who got active TMS had a good reduction in their suicidality. So we're hoping now to start using it more in outpatient clinical settings, maybe even in emergency room settings, to see if we can actually get the population to view suicidal crisis not as a moral issue, but actually as a medical issue, just like we deal with heart attacks or with impending strokes, to get them thinking that it's a brain disorder, and to get them in talking to people and potentially being able to get a treatment that will save lives. And with that, I'll stop and turn it over to Dr. Deskalakis.
So as Dr. George mentioned, TMS is an effective treatment for the treatment of resistant depression, and depression has a significant impact on our healthcare system, significant impact on our patients. 4.8% of Canadians suffer from depression last year, which is an extraordinary figure. It underscores how and many people are affected in this population, and also underscores that there are tremendous costs associated with this illness. Of those people who have depression, only about a third respond to medications. Only about a third do not respond to medications, and in fact, some say up to a half do not respond to medication when you take into consideration the fact that patients lose their response over some time. And in Toronto, that implies that up to 274,000 patients, you know, several Rogers centers full of patients are struggling with depression every year, and it's an extraordinary illness. It's an illness that impacts probably more than many other illnesses, with the exception of big, broader diagnoses like cancer and heart disease. And as Dr. George pointed out, up to 50% of people can get better with RTMS treatment, and significantly more so than with ongoing trials of medications. We have the Temerty Center for Therapeutic Brain Intervention at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, where we focus on these treatments like TMS and other treatments to improve the lives of our patients with depression. And we offer our TMS. CAMH is one of the first centers in Ontario, and one of the first centers in Canada, for that matter, to be able to offer our TMS as a compassionate treatment to our patients with depression. RTMS was approved in Canada. Canada was one of the first countries to approve it back in 2002, which was followed by the FDA in 2008. And the treatment right now is actually reimbursed. So several provincial funding agencies have decided that RTMS was a treatment that we needed to invest in, because it not only does it help people's lives, but it significantly reduces the financial burden of depression on the government. And so it is now reimbursed in Saskatchewan and Quebec, and there are currently applications for it in Ontario and Alberta. Because it's not funded, there are a limited number of clinics available. So you can't get this life-saving, oftentimes, life-saving treatment in Ontario. There's 10 clinics across Ontario compared to 50 with ECT. And remember, the big difference between RTMS and ECT is that ECT is invasive and causes side effects as opposed to RTMS, which is non-invasive and can work very effectively. Treatment-resistant depression has a profound cost on society. Every patient with treatment-resistant depression costs the system approximately $19,000 per year, and when you treat patients with RTMS, the costs are reduced considerably down to approximately $6,500. So it just underscores the fact that this is a treatment that is not only effective, but actually saves dollars by treating patients, improving their quality of life, and also reducing the financial burden that patients experience on to themselves and also on taxpayers of this problem. I think we're now going to invite Gail Bellissimo up to talk about her experience having received RTMS treatment.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gail Bellissimo. Thank you for having me today. It's been a great morning so far. Fascinating talks about all the wonderful research and treatments in brain science. It's my pleasure to be here to share my experiences with RTMS and coping with major depression. I'm a married mom of four sons. I live in the suburbs. And I was diagnosed with depression in the early 2000s. Major depression since 2009, treatment resistant. Looking back, I had symptoms probably back into my late teens, early 20s when I was in high school. Depression, and for me, I think it steals so much from a person. I describe it as an illness that insidiously really defeats one's senses. Your sight, sound, touch, even smell and taste. There's no dimension to anything. Everything's dull, flat, monotone. It's like living in four walls with a window if you're lucky. You can see outside, but you know there's sounds and noises, but they're hard to distinguish. Everything does sound very noisy. Your tactile sense is very, very flat. Depression robs you of memory, short-term memory, long-term memory. It's embarrassing when you can't absorb simple information. You don't want to ask questions because you fear that you've already asked them and you just can't remember the answers. No matter how hard you pay attention, you just are not sure that you'll ever get your memory or your memories back. As depression worsened, I began losing my ability to communicate effectively. The ability to put a thought into words and words into a complete sentence was extraordinarily difficult and exhausting. Telling someone who's depressed to look on the bright side, appreciate the little things or live in the moment. It doesn't work. There are no moments in depression. There's just existence. People are driven into silence because of overwhelming guilt. In part, they appear as if they don't appreciate all the wonderful things life has to offer. I began to hate myself because I knew and felt that I was letting down my family, and I just couldn't get to that place where I felt that everyone else were experiencing and enjoying life. I couldn't get there. Every single day I tried, though. Fortunately, I found RTMS. I found information online. I brought it to the attention of my treating physician, who referred me down to PMH, where I met with physicians. And luckily, I was accepted into the study in February of this year. The study was 4 weeks in duration, with the option of an additional 2 weeks if I saw substantial benefit to it. I had no expectations. I had been on so many medications that either didn't work, worked temporarily, or had such adverse side effects that I just couldn't function. After 2 weeks of treatment, I noticed what I call a shift. Difficult to describe it. I don't ever really recall having experienced what it was I was feeling. It was great, a little unnerving at first. There was a clarity and lightness. the first words I remember as I was driving home one day after treatment at the end of the second week was texture. I was getting my senses back. Very hard to find words to explain it. But I thought to myself, is this what it feels like to be normal? How long was it going to last? And is there any way that I could bottle this? I could breathe. The lead weight and the incapacitating fog was lifted, allowing me to see a path, the direction of which was finally a positive one. Constant worry and rumination was virtually gone by that time, and I could laugh again. By the end of the third week of treatments, for the first time again in a long time, I felt like I deserved to be here, that maybe I had a purpose. The treatment has allowed me to thrive, not just to survive. In my opinion, the science is there. Been there for a while. There's groundbreaking treatments out there, and anyone that can benefit the way I have from these types of treatments should be able to reach out and get it. For me, knowing this treatment's available was 60% of the battle. I want to sincerely thank the staff at CAMH, who are some of the most caring, compassionate, and encouraging people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. My incredible doctor, and most importantly, my family, for their love and support. I'm in the best place I've ever been, loving life, recovering, and looking forward. Thank you.
So I want to talk briefly about preventing Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a major public health problem in Canada, and it's estimated that 15%, 1/5, of Canadians age 65 or older are currently living with cognitive impairment or dementia. The current available treatment provides some symptom management, but the disease typically is progressive, and so the future is in prevention. We are talking about a trial that was funded by the federal government through Brain Canada and a generous philanthropist that is going to use a form of brain stimulation called TDCS, transcranial direct current stimulation, which consists of circulating a low-intensity electrical current through two electrodes, and that passes through part of your brain. It's a painless procedure, it's non-invasive, it doesn't require anesthesia, it has minimal side effects, and it has led in some early trials to a temporary cognitive improvement. And it is going to be studied for the prevention of Alzheimer's disease when it's combined with some cognitive exercise in a form called the therapy called cognitive remediation. As I've mentioned, the people who could benefit are people who are at high risk for Alzheimer's disease, and this trial is going to target those patients who have either a severe depression that has been recently treated or who have the mild cognitive impairment that's often a prodrome for dementia or who have both. The goal is to prevent or slow down the cognitive impairment in those patients that's delaying or preventing a diagnosis of dementia. We'll recruit 375 participants in 5 sites, and we'll follow them, we'll treat them and in the intervention, and they will both follow for up to 5 years. For those who may be interested in hearing more about the study or in having people they know may be interested in participating on this slide, you have the phone number of Sarah Gambino, 416-535-8501, extension 33657, to get more information about the study or about participation. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much for your presentation. A reminder for the journalists online, you can ask your question by typing it into the chat box on the lower right of your screen. Include your name, your organization, and the panel member to whom you'd like to address your question. You will then be unmuted to ask your question. If you're joining us by phone conference only and can't type into the chat box, you can send your questions to info@sciencemedia.ca, and we will ask the questions in the order that they're received. Vincent?
Merci, Penny. Donc, c'est le moment de poser vos questions. S'il vous plaît, inscrivez dans la boîte de clavardage en bas à droite de la fenêtre du webinaire votre nom et votre organisation. Nous vous donnerons la parole le temps venu. Si vous nous joignez uniquement par conférence téléphonique, faites-nous parvenir vos questions à l'adresse info@sciencemedia.ca et nous la poserons en votre nom. À toi, Penny.
Great. We've got a question already here from Belle Skolinka from Le Devoir. Can you hear us, Isabel?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question to Dr. Musson. Bonjour, Monsieur Musson. Je suis journaliste au quotidien Le Devoir. Je voulais savoir quels étaient les enjeux éthiques, en fait, de la stimulation cérébrale par rapport aux patients, par rapport à la recherche médicale.
Je vais demander une question sur les dangers.
Sur les enjeux éthiques, c'est-à-dire quels sont les
enjeux éthiques. Les enjeux éthiques, c'est que, comme tous les traitements, c'est le consentement du patient et de sa famille. Nous ne pensons pas que la stimulation cérébrale change le cerveau. C'est une forme de traitement.
OK. Donc, pour l'instant, au niveau des dangers, au niveau de la session du risque par rapport à la stimulation cérébrale, vous considérez pas qu'il y a de grands risques par rapport à ça? Ça change pas la structure du cerveau?
Ça ne change pas la structure du cerveau. Les risques sont minimaux, probablement pas plus dangereux que une forme de thérapie où on parle avec un thérapeute.
D'accord. Merci beaucoup.
Okay, and for the benefit of the English speaker, Dr. Musson, can you repeat your answer in English to the question, what are the ethical issues that are raised by these new techniques?
So the question was, are they ethical issue? What are the danger? I said that the ethical issue involved are the same as with any treatment. The patient need to understand the risk, the benefit, and to consent to the treatment. And in terms of danger, I said that the treatment we're talking about today, TMS or TDCS, are actually extremely well tolerated. They have a minimal side effect, no different from medication that people take daily, you know, that could give them some mild headache or feeling tired. And in terms of, there was a question about, can it change the structure of your brain? And I say we don't believe those treatments change the brain structure, but obviously they are therapeutic. They change some process in your brain the same way that talk therapy, psychotherapy would, no more, no less.
Do we have any idea what actually is going on in the brain with these modalities, Dr. George?
Sure, we know lots of what's going on in the brain. So when I apply a TMS pulse to my over my motor area, it will cause my thumb to move. So I'm actually engaging the circuit that I normally use to do this, but I'm just starting that externally with the TMS pulse. And so when we move the TMS pulses to other parts of the brain, we're just actually doing in the brain that which the brain normally does on its own. So, and we can see that, and if we do it all inside the scanner, we can see with beautiful detail exactly how we're just externally causing the brain to do what it normally would. When we're using it therapeutically, I often think about it like going to the gym. So why is it that it took 2 weeks before you actually started to come out of your depression? And I wonder, we give 3,000 pulses or around that for a session, and I wonder if it's just like lifting weights. We're actually kind of externally stimulating a circuit that hadn't been working right in your brain. And so I often think that what we're doing with these external stimulations is really kind of a focused, concentrated exercise of the brain, because we're just asking the brain to do what it normally would do. We're just using an external trigger for it. Normally we You know, I volitionally make my brain do things, or when I talk to you, I encourage you to do it. But here's just another way of getting the brain to do what it normally does in health.
Okay, we've got another question from freelance science writer Leslie Evans Ogden. Leslie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Actually, Penny, part of my question you just asked, but my question was also for Dr. George. You mentioned that you stumbled upon this approach, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate on how you actually discovered that this was an effective technique in the first place.
Well, I absolutely stumbled on the technique. I told the audience in my lecture earlier today that I first encountered TMS when I was doing a research fellowship in London, and I was in an elevator, and a subject in a study kind of looked at me and said, "You'll never believe what happened in the lab up there. This guy put a magnet on my head and made my thumb move." And so I asked him what floor he had been on, and then I went up and discovered kind of TMS, which really had been made in its modern form about 4 years before I got to Queen Square. And Queen Square was one of the few places in the world that had a machine, and they were using it in the motor system to explore how information and how the motor system works. I had been looking at using PET scanning in depression, and so it became pretty obvious to me that we might be able to use the technology to go to those circuits and try to engage and re-engage the therapeutic parts of the brain that weren't working right. I then had the fortune of going to NIH where they had a machine, and I had a mentor who allowed me to play, and we did our first proof of concept studies there, and then our first randomized controlled trial there, and then it took 15 years to change the world to get FDA approval and an industry. So the first studies were there in Bethesda, and it was really just an idea, and it was heretical at the time. People thought that the only way you could use a focal treatment to get better was with electroconvulsive therapy, which involved a seizure. I said that everybody back then worshipped at the church of the seizure, and it was heretical to say, no, we don't need a seizure. We can actually just exercise the circuits. That was not well accepted, but gradually the world's changed, and we now realize that TMS, TDCS, deep brain stimulation, we can get in. We don't need a seizure anymore. We need a seizure for ECT, but we don't need it for other forms of brain stimulation. So I had some ideas. I was very lucky to be in places at a time in my career where people allowed risk, and here we are today, and it's just exploding.
Okay, we've got another question from Cheryl Ubelacher with Canadian Press. Cheryl, are you there?
Hi, yes. Sorry, can you hear me?
And indeed, go ahead.
Okay. I did have a few questions that I put on the chat line, but you can ignore them. I guess to whomever would like to answer this, first of all, what are the side effects of TMS, if any, and how long do they last? And secondarily, the treatments, how long are they each time, and how long would somebody have the treatment?
So the side effects of TMS are fairly benign. About 10 to 15% of patients will experience a headache. A larger proportion of patients will experience a little bit of pain, a slight sensation over their head, that at the beginning can feel a little bit uncomfortable, but over time patients develop a remarkable tolerance to the discomfort, I should say, associated with the TMS treatment. Then about 1 in 1,000 patients have just like a needle stick injury where you can have, you know, you can faint as a result of getting your blood taken. About 1 in 1,000 patients can have what's called a syncopal episode where they kind of faint from having a treatment. But that has also, as I say, were very rare. And then about 1 in 10,000 to about 1 in 100,000 patients will experience a seizure. Now, the treatment is extraordinarily safe, and typically what we've discovered is that the patients who have a seizure as a result of our TMS probably have an underlying seizure disorder. And so those are side effects that most patients are more than willing to take when you consider that the benefits of up to 50% of significant improvement in their depressive symptoms. The second part to your question was?
And I'm sorry, is that Dr. George speaking?
No, it's Dr. Daskalakis.
Okay, yeah, I couldn't tell the difference. The second part was, how long would a course of treatment last, and how long would each treatment be time-wise?
So a typical treatment is about, the approved treatments are about 40 minutes in duration. They happen every day for about a week times 4 weeks. So you come in 5 days a week and for 4 weeks. So about 20 treatments, although some people are investigating shorter treatments, some people are investigating other treatments. There are some novel interventions that are looking at using the treatment to shorten the duration, the overall duration, so that you only need a treatment for a few minutes a day as opposed to several minutes a day, although those data are very, very preliminary. And it's unclear whether or not it can be as efficacious or as effective. However, the treatment itself has persistent effects. So once you achieve remission, the likelihood of staying in remission is quite high, provided you get what's called maintenance treatment. And typically what we do is we ask patients to come in a couple of times a week for the first 4 to 6 weeks, and then once a week after that. And if you do that and do it successfully, patients will stay in remission for prolonged periods of time. And the longer you keep people in remission, the less likely it is that they're going to experience a relapse. In other words, they don't have to get the treatment forever, but if you can maintain them in a wellness state for a prolonged period of time, then eventually the brain takes over and stays in that wellness state.
Okay, and one last thing, if I might. This is passed over the skull. How is that area targeted? Like, how do you know where to put the stimulation?
So the original studies looked at stimulating the area of the brain that controlled for thumb movements, and then it was an approximation to move forward from that area of the brain about 5 centimeters, and that targeted the area of the brain called the prefrontal cortex that we think is important in treating depression. Nowadays, fast forward 15 years later, and we are using MRI-guided approaches. In other words, you have an MRI of the patient's brain, and you identify the prefrontal cortex based on their anatomy and based on their what's called functional region of activation. In other words, you know roughly where in the brain the prefrontal cortex is based on some coordinates. And you can actually deliver the stimuli directly to the prefrontal cortex through a process known as cortical co-registration, which involves a series of optical tracking systems that nicely coordinates the coil field over the prefrontal cortex. And there are studies that suggest that when you do that, you get an enhanced response to the treatment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, we have one final question. Leslie has a follow-up question for Gail Bellissimo. Leslie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So my question is for Gail. I'm wondering if you can describe what the treatment actually feels like, the sensory experience of the RTMS treatment.
I actually received the short treatment. So my treatment was 3 minutes and 9 seconds. For me, it was painless. Initially, you feel like a tapping. Somebody's just tapping away at one specific part of your forehead, the left side of your forehead. Other than that, it's quick. It's, a succession of 5 seconds or such of pulse, magnetic pulse, then it stops for a few seconds, and then it starts up. It's not 3 continuous minutes of constant pulsing. I had no side effects. I didn't have a headache. I did. Probably the first day I had a headache, a little bit of tenderness on my head. Other than that, nothing. No physical side effects, not tired. If anything, I was energized, especially after the second week of my treatment, and Dr. George talked about exercising the brain. It was almost, I mentioned to the technicians because I thought it was, again, I was a little unnerved, but it was like my brain wanted more of it. The clarity I had, it was like I would just look forward to going in each day to get that treatment. because I come out energized. So it was kind of like I'd been to the gym.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm very cognizant that we've taken your lunch time and you've got more of the conference to go to, but thank you very much. Thank you to our journalists online. If you have any other questions, if you'd like visuals from the presentation, or if you have any other questions, you can get in touch with us at the Science Media Center of Canada, and we can help you. So thanks again. Thanks for your time.